Hello everyone and welcome back to series 3 of The Stagey Place, or if you've just been binging the past two series, hello again! We are back for series 3. My name's Elliot Shepherd and I am very, very excited to be back because this series we have got absolute belter of guests on our show. From today's episode with Rebecca Pitt, who is a graphic designer, all the way through to Sam Diaz, who is in episode 6 of this series. Every single guest we have recorded before releasing this first episode today, and I am so, so excited for you guys to listen to what they have to say about their different paths within the industry and what they do within the industry. I think, you know, you're all going to absolutely love this series, so do stay tuned. Even if you don't know some of the guests, you're going to absolutely love what they've got to say. I also just want to say, and you may have noticed from today's artwork, we have brand new graphics done by the incredible Robin from High Top Design. You'll hear his advert at some point during this episode, but I just want to say, Robin, if you're listening, you've done an absolutely incredible job. I know that we've kept messaging, I know that I've said it to you time and time again, you've just completely pulled it out of the bag this series with all of the guests and doing all the artwork for the previous guests in our previous series. It's been an absolute pleasure to work with you and I cannot wait to see what we get to work on in the future. So guys, the time has finally come and I'm so excited because I have wanted to get Rebecca Pitt, who I've just said is a graphic designer, on the series for such a long time because her work is so universal and so amazing, and I'm so excited for you guys. You can probably hear it in my voice. I'm so excited for you guys to listen to this episode. So let's get going. Hello, Rebecca. Welcome to The Stagey Place.
Hello, thank you for having me on.
Well, no, thank you so much for coming on and agreeing to be my first guest of this brand new series. Whilst listeners may not know your name or your face, Rebecca, your work is so universal that everybody will be familiar with it within our industry. Because from shows such as Six, Amelie, The Great Gatsby, the comedy about a bank robbery, Titanic the musical, City of Glass, The Jungle, and the Edinburgh Fringe shows, The War of the Worlds, and The Fishbowl, you've regularly worked at the Theatre Royal Stratford East, the Young Vic, Exeter Northcote Theatre and the Barn Theatre, in being the forefront in creating the promotional material for all these shows and companies and theatres through your poster and programme designs. And whilst we'll eventually get on to chat about your career working on some of the above productions and theatres, I wanted to take a step back and firstly find out a little bit about you and about what a younger Rebecca was like, and ask you straight off the bat, which of the two actually came first? Was it theatre or creative design?
It was definitely theatre for me. So I used to go to the theatre with my granny, who was from Sheffield. We used to go to the Crucible together. And from a young age, I don't know, probably about 6, it was really my favourite thing. And I did all drama clubs and things after school. And then as I got older, I did lots of plays and I was really into just everything about theatre. I'd always been into art as well. I did a lot of painting as a teenager and in my early 20s. And then it just seemed like a natural progression, given that I didn't think it was really very possible to become an actor or something. I thought that would be the ideal mixture of the things that I liked.
Yeah, and so then with creative design then, did you know that that was kind of an avenue that you could take within the industry?
I'm not quite sure when I first became aware of it. I think when I was at university, actually, I had a friend who asked me to do a poster for her play, given that she knew that I could draw and do painting and things. And it never really occurred to me before, but I did a pretty rubbish poster for her play. And that was sort of the first time I thought, oh, this is a thing. And from that moment onwards, really, that became what I really wanted to do. And then I started sort of investigating what companies did that and how it worked in the industry and that sort of thing.
So when you came to the realisation that graphic design was the path you wanted to come into and you were looking at the direction of theatre, what were your first steps actually into opening yourself up in a way of approaching the industry and approaching some of these companies you say that you were researching?
Sure. So I did an internship at AKA, which I applied for. They had marketing interns and I applied online and that was fine. That was a sort of an unpaid internship for 2 months in London, which I sort of funded by selling paint oil paintings. And then from there, obviously, I was pretty desperate for it to turn into a real job. There was a marketing job advertised at De Winters, the other advertising agency. So I applied for that job and got that job. And then I was sort of sufficiently bad at that and sufficiently good at other stuff that I got moved out of marketing and moved into the studio. Yeah. And I worked there for 3.5 or so years before I started to set up on my own.
Amazing. And so when were there, just touching upon, you know, opening yourself up to work with creatives, how much freedom, if any, do you actually get when designing the show material? Because does it usually vary from client to client, or do you get the chance to read the scripts beforehand to actually get an understanding and vision of what the marketing must convey to show off the production's full potential?
Yes, so I do always read the script if there is a script. Obviously, sometimes things are in early development and there isn't a script yet. Yeah. Ideally, I listen to demo tracks as well if it's a musical. I guess there's quite a lot of, I mean, I don't know if freedom's the right word really. It's not completely my choice, but I think I have quite a lot of creative control, but obviously it's always also about what the client wants. But yeah. I suppose I try and persuade them that they want what I think will look good. So when I initially get a brief, I get sent a script, maybe demo of soundtrack and any other information that they know about the show. And then I'll go away and read that and digest that. And then I'll suggest ideas. So I guess that's my control, is that I get to sort of decide what ideas that I suggest. And then the client can choose yeah. what they like. And, you know, they can sort of give me feedback and develop the image with me.
Yeah. And also earlier on, when I was talking about finding about your creations and your posters, I remember it was quite early in lockdown. You did a video for the King's Head Theatre, I think it was, and you were talking about your developments of your posters, and specifically the Amelie poster, which I think's a fantastic poster, where you have the Amelie text, which is in yellow, and then you've got this green background and Audrey Brisson sat on top of the text, almost looking behind. And it's such an iconic one because it just has the text and the character and just conveys everything that you need to tease out what a musical is going to be like. For you, what would you say are the most vital components of actually creating a marketing material for any show?
I think simplicity is a good thing. I think it's best to boil down what you're trying to say about the show into something really small rather than trying to put everything on the poster. Yeah. But then I also think that there aren't any hard and fast rules, and you could have a really cool, really complicated poster. For example, it wasn't one of mine, but there was a season at the Globe, I think a couple of years ago, where they had these collage posters that were really intricate and not yeah. simple at all, but they were really effective. So I don't think it has to be simple, but my taste tends to be for simple and iconic. Try and think of simplest way of getting across the most exciting thing about the show, I suppose.
I'm just going to jump in here. Hi everyone, I'm Robin from High Top Design, and you're probably wondering who I am. Well, I'm a graphic designer with over 10 years experience in corporate communications. I've recently been working with Elliot on the new logo for the Stagey Place, and I'm the one responsible for the cartoon versions of his guests. But why am I interrupting the interview? I just want to let you guys know that as well as podcast artwork, I can help with lots of other things. Design projects, CVs, photo restorations, websites, magazines, posters, programs, anything like that, just give me a shout. Honestly, no job is too big or too small, and I will work with you to make sure the end result looks awesome. Don't need anything designed? No worries at all. I know you love theatre as you're listening to this podcast, so you will probably like my range of musical theatre prints and badges. I also have a cute range of mushroom pride pins, or I can make you and your family and friends into cartoon versions like the guests of this show. You can find all this and much more on my website, hightop.design, or give me a like and a follow on Instagram and Facebook. I'm hightopdesign on those as well. Anyway, thanks guys. I will now let you get back to the show.
I definitely think you captured that really well when looking at the 2020, what was meant to be the 2020 season at the Barn Theatre in Cirencester. You had these really vibrant colours with all the posters for all the productions that was meant to be a part of that season, from the purple of Cinderella, and then you had the was it the black and red of Turn of the Screw, and then the blue of Mozart's Question, and the yellowy orange of Ben-Hur. They had these centre photos, and I just thought that we'd chat a little bit about that season and how amazing they were.
Yeah, with the Barn Theatre with that season, I was trying to create an overall look for the season. So I had this idea that there'd be sort of a main colour for each of them, but there'd also be a light source within the poster for each of them. So, for example, the Mozart Question, which is one of those posters, has a lamp in the middle which glows yellow and sort of lights everything else. You know, yes, in the Turn of the Screw, the light is coming from the little house that he's holding in his hands. And then with Ben-Hur, the light is coming from the sun behind. So I guess I just wanted, given that they were all very different shows, I wanted something to tie them together. And I sort of picked a different colour for each one. And then, yes, I had this sort of light source within the image, which, and I think having a limited colour scheme really helped. That's kind of a way of being simple, is not having all of the colours. So, you know, Mozart Question, for example, was all blue and yellow, and Turn of the Screw was all black and red.
Well, yeah, I'm just on your website now, and it's the Mozart Question, the blue poster, which has the man on the bridge with, I think it's the violin.
That's actually, that's my partner in that picture.
Oh, really?
He doesn't play the violin, but I bought a violin and I got him to try and hold it in a convincing way. And it's his nephew that is the little boy in the picture.
Oh, that's so sweet. And it actually reminds me of a story when I used to have an old Gmail account that had a photo of me holding a ukulele. Now, I did not know how to play the ukulele, and I just bought it because it was kind of the thing at the time. Everybody wanted one. Everybody was playing one in music videos. And so I bought it, and the exact same night, I made up this makeshift backdrop, and I had the ukulele with me, and I made it as my Facebook profile picture. And then somebody realised that I wasn't playing it the right way and called me out on it. And I was like, oh, damn it. And I never actually played the ukulele properly.
I had to look up lots of pictures of how a violinist holds a violin in order to try and get that to look vaguely convincing. I'm still not quite sure it would pass the test if a professional musician looked at it.
And so as a graphic designer then, and throughout your whole career, have you ever had those sort of pinch me moments where you've worked on shows and then like you've seen the poster around outside the West End or any regional theatres and you kind of think, I cannot believe that I've actually worked on some of these shows and now they're being seen on programmes and on billboards and outside the marquees at the theatres?
I think when I was new to the job, I think I used to find it so exciting to see my work just up anywhere, to be honest.
Yeah.
I suppose 12 years in, I'm still pleased to see it up. I think what I quite like is when I see something that I didn't, as a surprise, you know, I didn't realise that it was going to be on the escalators. And then when I go down the escalators,
of course,
I see it because, you know, sometimes the campaigns don't go up immediately. So it's nice to see things as a surprise. I mean, I don't really get, I don't tend to go after big projects all the time. You know, I can't really cope with more than one West End show at a time because there's a lot of art working. So I'm not sort of, for me, it's not about the bigger the show, the more exciting it is to work on, really. I mean, it can be much more exciting to work on the smaller shows. Edinburgh Fringe is one of my favourite things, really, because there's just so much freedom and you can be quite sort of arty with it, I guess.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's not necessarily the case that working on a really big show is more exciting.
Off the back of that then, saying that you only like to work on one West End show, you know, promotional material at a time, how many would you say at the height of the calendar year are you working on in the background as well as, you know, the main forefront of material?
So it's slightly different at the moment because of COVID, but normally I'd say I have probably about 5 new posters on the go at any one time.
Wow.
But then I also have ongoing artwork for shows that are already running. So, you know, one that I've already designed the poster for, but they need new artwork with the production shots on, or they need different ads and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So I suppose my list of work in progress is usually about 20 to 25 shows, but they're not all at the beginning stage of concept design. A lot of them are sort of chugging along with just creating a couple of ads each day.
Yeah, throughout the whole process of working with your clients on the theatrical posters and the programmes, what has been the biggest change for you as a creative throughout the whole process of being a designer, especially as, you know, we're working through the pandemic now at the moment?
It's definitely been COVID. That sounds a bit boring,
no,
but
it's
changed the nature of the work I do because there aren't any ongoing shows. So there's no sort of daily ads and things, really.
Yeah.
A lot of people have much smaller budgets. So you have to just create something quickly that will just, you know, do for a streaming project.
Yeah.
So it's changed. You know, I've had a lot less work on, well, at the start anyway. But now it's a lot of just the original concept work and then no follow-up work at all, usually. At the moment, I'm doing a lot of things like musicals that are in development,
yeah,
and people who are doing, you know, R&D on a play and that sort of thing. And all they want is just the concept design for the poster.
Yeah.
And the show's not actually happening yet. So there's no day-to-day ongoing work with that. It's just one poster and then it's finished,
yeah,
which is, it can be quite tiring because there's a lot of generating of ideas required and not much of the easy stuff.
Yeah, and actually I just wanted to touch upon the programs and the brochures, because I get with a poster you could see it whenever you go to a show. You can't really miss a poster outside a theatre or a marquee or a billboard. But with the programs and the brochures, do you have that same sort of concept from clients that they want to include stuff in the programs, or do you have any more of a free rein of what's going into the programs?
Well, programs is really just one of the sort of follow-up tasks, I guess.
Yeah.
Once you've designed the poster, you should be able to take elements from that to inform how you design the program. I mean, you might come up with a few new framing ideas and that sort of thing, but it's all got to feel like it's part of the same world as the poster. So when I get briefed for a program, I just get a Word document,
yeah,
with all the text in, and then I might get a zip file of headshots,
yeah,
and sometimes production shots if I'm lucky, and then I've just got to, I just work out how to make it look nice, really. But that's quite a small part of my job, really. Programs, it's kind of a one-off, just a follow-up thing, and not all shows even have them, and
yeah,
sometimes people get other people to design the programs, so it's not always me that does them.
Hi, my name is Emily, and I'm the proud owner of Your Little Theatre. Your Little Theatre is your new place to find pre-loved theatre plays at affordable prices. But we don't just stop there, we also match you with some ace small businesses. Kick back and relax with our Blind Date with a Play, where you receive a mystery theatre play for only £5. Or treat yourself even more and get any of our mystery boxes, which all include at least one theatre play or musical theatre score, plus some trinkets from our ace partners of small businesses, who include Hello You Handmade Co., Little Box Studios, Lucky Pup, Baking Bice Boobs, Luna and the Elephant, Geek Sheet Gifts, A Hella Load of Quirky, Tom Kofed, Totalist Graphics, The Harmony Hub, and Stagey Prints, plus so many more. Thank you so much, Stagey Place, for giving us this opportunity. And remember to use code STAGEYPLACE for 10% off on our website, www.yourlittletheatre.com. Thank you so much, and enjoy the rest of the podcast.
I'm just having a look at your website now, where I can see all the programs for the Antimatter Matters and how that's all like drawings and diagrams. And then you've got like the Boys in the Band, which has production shots with the cast, and like the Curing Room, that's also got some photos. So I see what you mean. You've got to create the world of the play within the program, because people might be reading it before the show and wondering what the set and what the costumes and what the lighting may look like during the show itself.
Yeah, with the Antimatter ones and the cosmic rays and things, but that wasn't a theatre project. That's something I've been doing for various universities, I guess, that are trying to sort of promote particle physics to people. So it was for an exhibition at the Royal Society, where families can go to the summer science exhibition,
yeah,
and learn about different aspects of science. So that was quite separate from theatre, really. But
yeah,
that was a much loved client of mine who I sort of vaguely met through theatre whilst I was at university.
Oh, that's amazing. It's so nice to hear about like the educational side of creating content, you know, to get really amazing messages across. And actually, it really feeds into the next question, because I was going to ask you about, you know, I'm sure a lot of people who have created posters for university or college projects may want to do this as a career, like you have done as a graphic designer. What kind of advice would you give those sorts of people who are looking to go down this avenue within our industry?
So I'm glad that I went into this as a job. I think it's a really,
yeah,
good job to have. It's really enjoyable, and as a freelancer, you've just got so much freedom over what you choose to work on and, you know, how you spend your working day. I suppose the main piece of advice I would give is difficult because normally I would say, well, try and get yourself a job at one of the agencies, but that's going to be difficult at the moment because of COVID and a lot of people have been made redundant. So I suppose if you didn't have much experience, you might be best to start out with some local theatres near you rather than trying to get into the London scene, given that there are not many plays happening at the moment.
Yeah.
But the other piece of advice I would give, I think, is that I still get this, but when I first started out, I used to have real sort of anxiety over what if the ideas don't come, you know?
Yeah.
And I remember having sleepless nights trying to think of ideas and thinking, well, I don't know what I'm going to do for this and I can't think of anything. And 12 years in, you realise that the ideas do come and you just have to wait, you know, you just have to be patient and let your brain get to that stage. But I think that can be quite scary at the start.
Yeah.
The other thing I think I'd say is to try and not be just a computer monkey. Try and try and take control over your own creative products, because otherwise sometimes you might do a design that it doesn't end up being very good and it's because you've sort of just done what you were told rather than thinking for yourself and suggesting your own ideas.
And do you find that over time you've been able to be upfront and have that conversation about, I mean, we're not saying freedom, but still that creative input on the projects that you're working on?
Definitely. I think some of my clients would probably say to the point of being quite blunt, but I will say if something isn't going to work, because, you know, I don't want them to waste money on an idea that's not going to work, I suppose.
Yeah.
And I think also when you hire a designer, you're hiring them to suggest the ideas and to tell you what looks good. You know, ultimately it is the client's decision, and I do have projects where you end up with something that you think, well, it doesn't look great, but that's what they want. You know, I tend to choose clients that are more likely to go with the thing, you know, that looks the best visually, but people have other priorities as well, and it's, for me, it's all about making a good poster, but for the client, there are other things going on as well, other people to please and that sort of thing.
Well, Rebecca, this chat has been amazing today, and I really want to thank you again so much for coming on to the Stagey Place. We're not finished just yet, though, as I've got one final question to ask, and this is, whereabouts is your Stagey Place? Now, this is the thing that kind of resolves the whole of the podcast, because it's getting to know what kind of makes you feel at home when you think about theatre. So this could be a place where you first saw your favourite show or your first ever show. It could be a place where it first encapsulated the reason why you wanted to work in the industry, or it could be a place where you've actually worked as a graphic designer. So Rebecca, I really want to know, whereabouts is your Stagey Place?
Well, can I have two places?
Yes, I'm absolutely happy for you to have two places.
So my first place would have to be the Crucible Theatre in Sheffield. My family are from Sheffield, and my granny used to take me there when I was younger, and that was where my love of theatre really started. I have this memory, I don't know how old I was, I'm going to guess around 8, of going to see Guys and Dolls, which was a musical I didn't know, I'd just been taken to see it, and it was amazing.
Yeah.
And I remember them doing an encore of Sit Down, You're Rocking the Boat at the end. They probably did that every night, but it felt like this really magical thing where everyone was just asking for more, and it felt really sort of, it just felt amazing. And I think because it was an encore and because that's sort of in theory prompted by the audience, I sort of felt like I was part of that too.
Yeah.
But I saw loads of shows there. Yeah, I saw one every Christmas with my granny. And even when I went back there a couple of years ago to see one of my friends in a play, and I still get that just sort of warm feeling of being there. It just feels, it's a really nice theatre, but it's not just that. It is my connection to my granny and having been there when I was little, I think.
Yeah.
And my second place would have to be the ADC Theatre in Cambridge.
Okay.
Where I spent most of my degree not writing essays, but being at the ADC. I just had such a good time there. I've been there sort of since, and I still get this feeling of the sort of anticipation of the first night of a show, and just, it almost makes me feel slightly nervous, but in a good way, you know.
Yeah.
I just was so happy my time there. Yeah, I think that building will always be special for me.
That's really nice to know. And actually, two theatres that haven't popped up on this podcast, or, you know, two theatres that I'm not necessarily familiar with. I mean, I know about the Crucible a little bit, but I've never been to it. So it's nice to hear about theatres that haven't come up on the podcast and also that are away from London as well. It's just really lovely to hear that these theatres, you know, draw back those memories from the first time that you've ever seen a show there. It's, you know, it's come up quite often with our guests that that's the case when they're picking their staging place, because it really is those first steps in coming into theatre and seeing shows.
I think also when you've been to a theatre lots, you start to sort of feel a bit of ownership over it. I think that's how I feel a bit with the Crucible and the ADC, but there are a couple of theatres in London that I sort of start to feel that way about. I feel like this is my venue. I go here a lot and I know which seats I book and I know my way around, and you feel almost like part of it. I think I sort of start to feel like that with the Almeida in North London. It's one of my favourite theatres to go to. And yeah, I mean, I've never worked there. I don't have any real connection to it. But I think when you've been somewhere a lot and you've sort of had moments where, you know, you've had shows that you really enjoyed there and really sort of important theatrical moments to you, then it starts to become a place that a special feeling when you arrive there, I think.
I completely agree with you on that point. There are some theatres in London where I know exactly where I want to sit. For example, like the Bridge Theatre. So last year, between the intervals of the lockdowns, and they were doing their one-person shows, so they had like Quarter Life Crisis and Nine Lives and then the Talking Heads with the collections from the BBC. I knew exactly which seats I wanted to sit in because I knew the best seats. But then you've got places like with the Little at the Summer Playhouse and the main stage of the Royal Court. Like, I know exactly where I want to sit and where the best seats are. So I think it's amazing, and I think I definitely agree. When you know a theatre, you know which seats you want to sit in, you do feel a part of something really special, and like you are almost, it's your second home being there.
You have to hope that that's not one of the ones that's blocked off then for people sitting apart.
Yeah. And I definitely think, you know, what you were saying about, you know, getting to know teams, you know, front of house, backstage at theatres that you've been to, I think it's really nice because it just means that you could be welcomed more when you're back, you know, seeing another show. But there we go, Rebecca, that is the stage you place. And I'd like to thank you so much for coming on today. It's been genuinely a real joy to get to chat with you.
Thank you. It's been lovely to talk to you too. Thank you for having me on.
And for people out there listening to this episode who have got to know your work today and would like to see some more or to work with you in the future or see yourself on social media, whereabouts can they find you?
They can look at my website, which is www.rebeccapitt.co.uk.
Well, we'll make sure all that information goes out when this episode goes live. But for now, Rebecca, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
And there we go, that was episode 1 of season 3 of The Stagey Place with Rebecca Pitt. And I'd love to thank Rebecca so much once again for coming on to The Stagey Place. We recorded this episode in January 2021, and since that episode was recorded, she has been releasing brand new material for even more productions, including Treason the Musical, Brooklyn the Musical, which you can still stream until the 4th of April 2021, as well as Public Domain, which was at the Southwark Playhouse and was one that I watched and absolutely adored. So I do recommend checking out all of her posters at rebeccapitt.co.uk. My name's been Elliot Shepherd. I have once again been hosting The Stagey Place. We are in Series 3. We're going to be back next Wednesday with Danny Can from Danny with a Camera, talking about the Dear Audience book and what it's been like taking intimate and incredible photos from all of your favourite West End productions. But until then, you've been listening to The Stagey Place. I hope you have a lovely week, and I look forward to hear from you soon.